Good morning and welcome to the Lodestar podcast news in brief. We are going to start this week as we have done for the past few episodes, and that is with a look at the Trans-Pacific market because it's been, as you all know, completely upended over the last few weeks. I don't really know what else to say. But last week on Friday, we saw the US remove its de minimis privileges for parcels from China and Hong Kong. Now, this is for all postal items valued under $800. So from the 2nd of May, these items were subject to one of two duty rates as elected by the carrier, and that is either 120% of the value of the item or $100 per item. And then from the 1st of June, this will be set at $200 per item. I mean, can you imagine if you're ordering a t-shirt from Shein or Temu and it's $6, all of a sudden it's going to be $206. Yeah, absolutely crazy. And Neil van der Waal, Chief Air Freight Officer at Senator, did point out that even though the de minimis rule will only be revoked for packages from China and Hong Kong, this will have close to the same impact for air freight as the US removing the de minimis for all countries, because the volumes from China are just so large. And I did a report last week that essentially removing this market will shift the power dynamic between airlines and shippers. And I'm sure you remember, because it was very recently, that capacity was really tight and airlines had the upper hand. But now they really need shipper volumes, especially on the Trans-Pacific. Although those who managed to secure long-term contracts with airlines at the end of last year might find themselves in a spot of bother if the airlines don't let them get out of it. And I did speak with industry consultant Derek Lossing, and he said that he thinks that there has to be some realization of capacity because airlines, A, aren't going to want to operate these empty flights if there aren't the volumes there, and B, if they do value the long-term relationships with big shippers or forwarders, they're not going to be charging them for flights that they're not operating. So fingers crossed there. And I'm now joined by the Lodestar publisher, Alex Linnane. Alex, have you had any information or anecdotes from stakeholders about the impacts of all of this? Or, I mean, did the air freight rates last week paint a picture at all of what the market's doing?
Well, rates don't actually have much of a story to tell at the moment, although they are slightly weaker than you would expect this time of year. Airlines are really in a wait and see mode. We're already seeing capacity on the move, in particular to Latin America, actually. We've spoken with carriers, including Atlas Air and Cargolux recently. Both admitted the market's really hard to read at the moment. But it's a sort of a tale of two sides. E-commerce accounts for about 50% of the air cargo between China and the US. So that's a lot of capacity in the market. Now, much of that will now have to go elsewhere, which in turn is going to put pressure on rates and yields for the airlines. But of course, it's actually much better news for, well, non-e-commerce shippers, particularly in perishables, where they've complained for some time about the lack of capacity. So there will be cheaper rates for people to enjoy elsewhere in the world. The difficulty is for shippers that cheap capacity is not going to help if no one's buying your stuff. The real test now is what's going to happen with the other tariffs. So will Chinese tariffs stick at 145%? It seems unlikely, but we don't know, and which other markets are going to see growth because of lower tariffs. So we're now going to have to wait until July, really, which is the end of the 90-day so-called pause on reciprocal tariffs, to find out what happens next. And that probably is going to determine the market a little bit more. It's really unlikely that the US will reinstall the de minimis exemption for China, in part because it was done under the Biden administration and just pushed through under Trump. One market, however, does look reasonably secure. India looks like it's likely to be among the first countries to agree a trade deal with the US, and that will bring much more certainty to the market. When you've got things like Apple is boosting production there, planning to make all its mobile phones for US there. So I think there's going to be a capacity shift to India. But again, as soon as all the capacity shifts, rates go down, and you're kind of back to where you started. But possibly good news for shippers if people carry on buying their stuff.
I'm now joined by the Lodestar's managing editor, Gavin Van Mull. And on the ocean side, Gab, what are we seeing on the Trans-Pacific? Anything interesting from last week?
Oh, it's all over the place. Demand is what you would probably describe as sclerotic, I think. Very good place to monitor this is the weekly amount of TEUs arriving into the port of LA. They take the data from when the shipments are being booked in Asia, and then they feed it into that system so they've got an idea each week exactly the number of TEUs that are going to arrive. So the week we're just about to enter, they expect to see 72,000 TEU coming into the Port of LA on across 15 vessels. That is down 35% year on year. So that is the dramatic drop in bookings out of China following the imposition of the tariffs, much expected. Then last week, our Asian correspondent, Alison Koo, reported that there had been a sudden resurgence in bookings in China by some of the largest US importers. Actually, I'd been told this is gossip very late last week. What it appears to have been is that the CEOs of some of the largest shippers, and we're talking Walmart, Home Depot, Target, Lowe's, they had a joint meeting with Trump. That was on Easter Monday. Whatever was said during that meeting, we don't know. But what we do know is that following that, there was a resumption in these bookings in China. And if you look at the throughput that the Port of Los Angeles is expecting for the week starting May the 11th, it is 97,000 TEU. Now, that is 34% on the week before, right? So basically, the numbers tell us that these rumors are probably true, that there has been a resumption in bookings, and it was most likely done by these major shippers. And we understand that the exporters in China are proposing free onboard terms, meaning the US importers will be responsible for the shipping costs and the tariffs when this cargo arrives. In that respect, demand is swinging from trough to peak over the course of 7 to 14 days. It's really quite extraordinary. We haven't seen such wild swings before in demand.
Yeah, it's really interesting because at the end of last week, I had a report from EC about schedule reliability in April. And I mean, despite the recent turbulence on the Trans-Pacific, they reported that the Far East to North America eastbound trade saw its best performance in terms of reliability since January 2024. And so in April, it had an on-time performance of 37%, which is still ridiculously low. But I mean, it's best since January 2024. That kind of gives you an idea of just how bad everything's been. Obviously, as much as it's taking up a lot of our editorial space, the Trans-Pacific market is not the only one that exists. According to EC, the Far East Europe westbound trade suffered a significant drop in on-time performance, ending April at 28% compared to 40% in March. This was largely due to North European port congestion. Last week, we saw yet more disruption as another strike hit Antwerp from Monday to Wednesday. This obviously caused major delays, but the port said it was working to clear the backlog by the end of the week. And there was also a Journal of Commerce webinar last week that focused on the Asia to Europe trade. What stuck out to you from this, Gav?
Well, just firstly, on what you mentioned about port congestion, my gut feeling on this is I think we're going to be writing about European port congestion quite a lot over the next month.
Right.
You can see it mounting up now. And the thing we always know about congestion is that once you start noticing it mount, it carries on mounting.
Yeah.
By the time you notice congestion happening, it's always already too late. Keep your eyes on European port congestion. General Commerce, yeah, they did a great webinar on the Europe-Asia trades. And it was a very interesting part of the discussion that focused on the peak season. Of course, if we cast our mind back a year, and it is almost a year to the day that we started noticing a surge in demand on Asia-Europe shipments, the freight rates went through the roof, base was in short supply, named accounts were losing their allocations and all this kind of stuff. And so really, the question is, are we about to see that again? Especially given that there's a lot of talk of Chinese exporters looking for new markets for their goods because obviously they're not sending them to the US anymore. So firstly, is there going to be a flood of cheap Chinese imports flooding into Europe? Probably not. At the moment, it would appear that there just simply isn't the demand in Europe to take on this sort of stuff. And secondly, will the peak season be as bad this year as it was last year? Probably not. Partly because what happened last year took everyone by surprise. This year, the thinking is that the networks are in place, the ships by and large are in place. Everyone is more prepared and understands how this sort of elongated supply chain works. So We will see. We would expect to see the beginnings of a peak season sometime in the next 4 weeks. But again, it's something that we'll be keeping an eye on, as we will with port congestion.
Well, Gav, in light of all the context that we've just given along these major trades, did the ocean rates tell us anything about demand or how the market was behaving last week?
They sort of did, yeah. We had slight declines on all the routes. I mean, I think the GRIs and the peak season surcharges and so on that came into effect in April, they didn't stick, but they prevented a complete price crash in the market as a result of the drop-off in volumes that we've talked about. Trans-Pacific into the US West Coast was down 1%, into the East Coast was down 2%, I think, and then into Northern Europe from Asia was down 5%, and into the Med down 4%. So it's gentle declines. The withdrawals of capacity are managing to sort of stave off a complete market collapse, which I'm sure the carriers are quite thankful of. We just have no idea how this is going to develop, though. If nothing changes in terms of so-called negotiations between China and US, then it's very, very difficult to see how rates will recover. It's a fairly depressing outlook for carriers.
To be honest, I think people are going to struggle to find sympathy for carriers after the COVID years, and especially with their earnings coming out at the moment. Yeah. It would be remiss not to touch on some of the results from the most recent quarter. Hapag-Lloyd released its preliminary Q1 earnings, and that revealed a 17% increase in EBITDA from the same period last year to $1.1 billion, and EBIT up 24% to $500 million. They attributed this to strong demand, which resulted in transported volume of 3.3 million TEU and an improved average freight rate of $1,480 per TEU, which were both 9% higher than in the same quarter of 2024. But for its full year forecast, like we've just been speaking about, Hapag-Lloyd were definitely less optimistic in a market they said characterized by many uncertainties. And they expect lower results for 2025 as a whole, with EBITDA in the range of $2.5 billion to $4 billion and an EBIT between break-even and $1.5 billion.
I mean, you almost wonder what the point of giving guidance on that.
Well, I mean, Ocean Network Express, they were even more uncertain. They presented their full-year earnings in 2024, and their EBIT for 2024 was $3.8 billion, up 871% from the year before. And their EBITDA was just over $5.9 billion, up 192% from 2023's $2 billion. But yeah, like I said, they were even more uncertain than Hapag-Lloyd, and they actually presented two different forecasts because everything was so uncertain that, and they said forecasting a precise full year figure for 2025 was really difficult. So they said that in a stable environment scenario, probably quite unlikely, but they said profits would be around $1.1 billion, while potentially weak cargo volumes and subsequent rates would give them $250 million.
I mean, you might as well just say our guidance is stick your own number here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, also last week we saw DSV report its Q1 earnings. And of course, last week marked the official takeover of DB Schenker by DSV. Gav, did you get any good bits of info from the earnings?
I mean, the long earnings call, they said it was going to be long and it was long. DSV basically maintained their prior year's guidance and then said, oh yeah, but now that we're with Schenker, we're going to add on what Schenker earned last year. And that's our range. So, I mean, if you want the back of an envelope calculation, that's almost like your very definition of it. One of the things we were talking about was this period where we're looking at how people have performed in line with the market or not. We don't actually have the official data for volumes for the first quarter. That's actually going to be released later this week, and I've asked the people at Container Trade Statistics for a couple of figures and some calculations, which we can share with the listeners next week. So at the moment, we're not sure what the actual demand side has been for the first 3 months of 2025. What we do know is that DSV said that their volumes had grown 3% for the first quarter, which they described as being at the low end of the market growth. So I think we're probably looking at a kind of 3 to 4% market growth, which, by the way, would suggest that Hapag-Lloyd's done bloody well in this first quarter. They're more than double that, if I'm right in my estimation. So the really interesting stuff with the DB Schenker DSV deal and what happens now is how they integrate the road freight and the contract logistics businesses. We already know DSV is a world leader in freight forwarding. It remains to be seen how much of the Schenker customer base they manage to retain as the integration of the two companies goes on. The DSV guys are quite bullish about it. How we have observed mergers and acquisitions in freight forwarders, amongst the freight forwarders before, has been that often it can be very difficult to retain customers. So on the freight forwarding side, that's still open to question. I think what are very interesting is really how they knit up the road transport business. You know, Schenker's got a really good European road transport business. And at the same time, road has consistently been DSV's weakest division. So that's going to be fascinating because there's real proper European heavyweight now if you put those two together. That's it.
Another takeover we reported last week was CMA CGM's acquisition of Air Belgium. We had mentioned previously that this was a possibility, but did this confirmation bring any additional details, Alex?
Well, as ever, in fact, I feel like I've got more questions now than I had before. I've been trying to find out what the plan is for the aircraft that were Air Belgium's and being leased to the Hongyuan Group, but so far I've had no response from anyone. What I did learn was that the Belgian court, which made all the decisions, said that the rival bid from Air One had faced really lengthy delays, which had upset the workforce at Air Belgium, who were not really sure what was going on. And they told the court it was fed up with all the delays. So I think that's partly why CMA won this particular deal. But it's a good purchase for CMA. They've already worked with Air Belgium and the aircraft, and it's a nice way of getting a new hub and nearly doubling its fleet. And just going back to what you and Gav were saying about DSV and Schenker, I've got to say, I'm so sad to say goodbye to DB Schenker. I did have a bit of a soft spot for that company for many reasons, one of which was almost uniquely, actually, among forwarders. They had a really responsive, very helpful press team, and I only wish they were transferring to DSV, but they're not. So sad.
Finally, there was an important announcement made by the Lodestar last week that some of our content is going to be put behind a paywall. For anyone who missed this, Alex, could you explain the details, please?
Yes, I can. The Lodestar has been going for about 13 years, during which time we have never bowed to corporate interests, even at the expense of advertising revenue, which of course, and I'll admit it now, can be impacted by our reporting. We have managed so far to keep the product free for readers, but it's a competitive market. Companies in our space may decide to put their marketing money into events, or they might give it to the big tech giants, or there's market volatility, which can create delays in advertising spend. So to be honest, it's just time we diversified our income so that we have a buffer for the bad times. And also, well-researched news really shouldn't and can't be free. We invest in journalists all around the world, and we really want to continue to do so. But readers will see more content. We're going to be introducing a new focus on trade lanes around the world in all mode. Our award-winning podcasts will also still be free. And right now, we've got the best editorial team we've ever had. They're a joy to work with, and I can guarantee that readers won't be disappointed by our content. We kind of feel that people would have bought us a pint for the free service we've been providing. And so that's what we're going to charge. And so far, to be honest, I've had so many nice messages from people saying that news should be paid for. And I should just add, please do get in touch if you're interested in our partner program for information sharing. If you do have problems not being able to afford it, or you want to share information with us, get in touch with us straight away. Thank you.
Yeah, I just want to clarify that this subscription is going to cost £10 a month or £70 a year, and Lodestar Premium will be £20 a month or £200 annually. And that will include all Lodestar products. You will be able to access 3 articles a month for free. And like you said, Alex, our podcasts will continue to be freely available. Thank you so much for supporting us, and thank you for joining me, Alex.
Thank you.
So I think that is all the main points from last week, neatly rounded up. And so here is what to look out for this week. Being that the de minimis exemption in the US for parcels from China and Hong Kong was removed on Friday. This week, we will start to see the impact it's going to have and how the CBP are coping with all the additional entry requirements. So we'll likely have some reports on what stakeholders are seeing. It is a continuation of the Q1 earnings season. And this week, all eyes will be on Maersk, who is reporting on the 8th of May. But before that, though, Expeditors will be reporting on the 6th of May. Hapag-Lloyd are hosting a webinar. And it looks like this is a joint webinar with DP World St. John, St. John Port Authority, and Canadian Pacific Kansas City Railroad. So it will be interesting to see what they say there, and we could have a report on that if it is something important. And just to note that it is a national holiday in England on Monday the 5th, so there will be no articles on that day. But the rest of the week, we will continue our excellent coverage as usual. Thank you so much for joining me, and I look forward to seeing you next time.